measuring program that Dr. Cohen mentioned earlier was the same measurement used that I got the statistic from. 46% lack access to an improved source. Now, this doesn't mean that everybody who has access to an improved source, being a deep well or a household connection, necessarily has continuous source, or that that water is treated before it gets to the house. And now when there was a water poverty index that was created so that you could to rank 147 countries, and Haiti was included and ranked the last of all those countries in terms of water resources. There's the average consumption of water in Haiti has been determined to be around 3 liters per person per day. And that is just including, that includes total water consumption. And considering that you need about 4.5 liters, it's estimated, just to live in the tropical conditions, especially if you're going to be doing manual labor outside, which most Haitians are doing, even if they're pregnant, then this is not even getting enough for hydration, let alone the water that you need for cooking and washing, just to prevent all of those water-washed infections and diseases. So this leads us, it makes sense then, that there is a high burden of waterborne, water-washed diseases in Haiti, and that is the leading cause of death of children under 5, but also, surprisingly, the leading cause of adult death, and that's 20 to 59 after HIV. And so the way that you can reduce these diseases is principally by increasing the quantity of water that's available to people. And you do that by reducing the distance that people have to travel to get to the water. Obviously, you can carry more water and go more frequently if the water source is nearby versus if you have to travel 2 hours and all you have is your own 2 arms to carry the water. Then there's the means of increasing the quality of the water. And that you can do it at the source or at the point of use to reduce the fecal contamination of the water. So here we go to Fond du Lac, Haiti, and that's where this study took place. You can see, I want you to note that within this interior, these are roads, actually, and within that interior, there pretty much are just very limited dirt roads. And roads sometimes not necessarily big enough for all vehicles, maybe a motorcycle or just a footpath. So you can see in the northern area, it's very hilly, very mountainous, rugged mountains. And as you get to the coast, it levels off a little bit, but it's still rocky and arid and hot. So like I said before, most of the people survive by subsistence farming. So they're outside working in the heat. And the nature of the economy makes it really difficult to compare one household's economic status versus another, just because the income is so inconsistent and very minimal. So what we did when we went to Fond du Lac, it was a mixed methods design. So first we started out talking with people, finding out what was important to them, learning, you know, some of the cultural context and ways to develop the survey tool. Then after developing the tool, we worked with local people we ended up interviewing 129 households, and 850 individuals data was collected on them as they were the individuals living in those 129 households. We also measured the contamination of the household drinking water and the source water that people got their drinking water from. And we found out measured the distance from the household to the water sources by recording the location of the household, map plotting the locations of the household and the water sources with a handheld GPS. And to supplement this data, we still continue to have focus groups throughout the duration. They were very popular and very, very loud, entertaining conversations or figured conversations, for sure. So we can see that the study population was a very young study population. The median was around 15 years, and people were living in very crowded quarters. Mind you, this is about 6 to 7 people per two-room house. And also want to mention that this should be some red flags for us public health students, the public health or workers in the field, that only 40% of households had soap at the time of the survey. and 54% of the households did not have a working latrine available. So here we go. These are the four neighborhoods. We have Gaspar in the north in the more mountainous region, Perrin, Deno, and Shasha. And these households, I know they might look a little different in size, but that's defined, that was predefined by the population. Everybody, even if you can't see it, everyone knows the extent and limit of each neighborhood. All right, and so in these neighborhoods, there's about four different types of sources that are available throughout the region. This is a cap source. I want you to notice that it's always flowing. And the purpose of the cap source is to secure and protect the water as it exits the ground so that it won't be contaminated by other water and people's movements around the water source. And this is a deep well, and it's so deep, some of them, it's amazing how they get things through this rugged rock terrain, and the only way to access and lift the water up is by a hand pump. So a lot of, even the little ones, have very large biceps. This is a shallow well, and this image, I want you to notice that although it appears, it might appear at first, that the water is, that the source is protected and covered, you can see the concrete slab has been removed because that turning pump no longer works, and so people sometimes just have to take a bucket or a modified tool to pull the water up. And here is a spring. All right, so different neighborhoods have different water sources available. For example, in Deno, which is the third from the top, it only has a shallow well available to the people in the neighborhood, whereas in Shasha, which is the largest spread neighborhood, they can walk to a spring, a shallow well, or if they're willing to make the trek, to a deep well. And while we were there, there was only two of those deep wells operating. All right. Wow, that's bold. Okay. So the bacterial quality of the water sources, and this is at the water source itself, not in the household. And I want to mention that the studies have been done that show that it's statistically significant risk for diarrhea if the source water has over 1,000 E. coli per 100 milliliters. And as was mentioned before, the World Health Organization, the guidelines are that no fecal coliform should be present within a 100 milliliter sample. So you can see even the protected, improved sources don't meet this guideline, and the spring is well above the 1,000 E. coli. All right, now once the water gets in the household, we see the difference that all households, regardless of where the water came from, have a high proportion of fecal contamination. But the spring water is the only one that's significantly different from the others, as it has much greater E. coli contamination. So you can see that regardless of where the water came from, and what's more interesting is the water that came from the cap spring and the deep well, the improved sources, I'm just going to flip back so you can see, they had a very low amount of fecal contamination, but once again, the household, it seems to, it has a larger proportion of increase, or larger decrease in quality. So this translates, it makes sense then, seeing the data on the bacterial quality of the water, that people whose closest water source is a spring or a shallow well are much more at risk for having diarrhea, and this is for children and adults. And also, as we mentioned before, that water quantity is reduced, people collect less water the farther they are from a source, so that for every kilometer away, up to about 6 kilometers, that was the largest distance that we measured, people are more likely to have symptoms of gastrointestinal disease, vomiting, nausea, or stomach ache, and diarrhea. And this is regardless of what neighborhood they lived in and what source type they used, and even if they used chemical treatment or not, or reported using it. So after time, you can see that this is going to cause a problem in the growth of the children. If you're always having, if you're having chronic diarrhea, you're going to have a lot more stunning. You're not going to be able to absorb as many nutrients. So the children that are living, if their closest water source is a spring, they're much more, they have much more high rates of stunting versus those that are close to the cap source. All right, so now let's go into what source do people prefer to use, because that's much more important for this area, to see what sources people are actually using. And one way to do this is to see how far people are willing to travel to get to the source. So that's exactly what this graph shows. And you can see by foot is in teal. And for all of the sources, the distance that people are traveling by foot is lower than the distance that people travel who have an animal, usually a donkey, except for the Calf Spring. So that means the people that just have, they're just going by foot, that don't have any other means of carrying the water besides themselves, will go an extra kilometer just to get to the Calf source than the people who have an animal. And after that, we can see that the shallow well and the spring people are willing to walk for, regardless of their transportation type. But the deep well, and also with the mapping we find, they'll go to it if it's nearby, but they're not going to make the big trek for it. Oops. Go. So this begs the question, what's wrong with the deep well? Why aren't people using it, even when it is available and not broken? Well, if you're living in an area, and we do this all the time, you define your surroundings, or you interpret contamination based on visual cues. And people use, they believe that most contamination, first of all, is from the water source. This is underscored by the fact that most people were requesting that the water source be treated and not their household water source be treated. So you have people that believe that most contamination happens at the source, and they cannot see the water in the deep well. But what they can see is the water in the shallow well, and it does not look so appetizing. It's got a green film on top. You see lots of objects, discarded garbage floating around on top. There's a smell to it. So people are very suspicious of the water that they can't see that's well below the ground, especially when you're pumping one day, a frog comes out. That makes you wonder what else is down there that you can't see. And if the water is all rusty, it's going to have a smell. No one likes drinking rusty water. And also when you see that color, they assume that is associated with bacterial contamination. So they're very concerned that there's other toxins that they don't know about that might be in that water. So other than, you know, the cues that we would find that water equally to be unappetizing, kind of like in D.C., right? They're not there, so you have to supplement your water source with another type of water, and there's very long lines. So we asked people also as a part of our survey, for all the water that they collected from each source, whether or not they treated the water from that source. And we found out that people, the water that they were least likely to treat, or the lowest proportion they were treating, was the spring water, which we know is most contaminated. So this underscores the finding that people believe that the well water is contaminated, so therefore they're more likely to treat it. Now, at the time when we were taking those samples, we asked people if they had treated the water that we had sampled that day, and only 20% of households reported treating the water. This is interesting considering we had also asked if people believed, we asked people how they could prevent diarrhea from occurring. And everybody, just about 80% of those who responded they could prevent diarrhea, said that you would treat the water to prevent diarrhea. But nobody, the people who were believed this were not necessarily the ones treating the water. As you can see, it's not associated with beliefs about water. If you believe that diarrhea is preventable, these people were not more likely to be treating the water at the time. And it wasn't associated with economic factors, because you think that would be definitely a barrier to treating water. And if you had the capabilities, you might. But let's remember, there's very poor population. Okay. So who was treating the water? We found that the people that were treating the water had somebody in the household that was suffering from diarrhea, stomach cramps, or vomiting, or had a child in the household who was suffering as diarrhea. So this suggests that water is being used as a treatment, as a remedy, but not as a preventative measure. So we asked people during the survey and in the focus groups why people don't treat the water. The resounding response was money. It costs money. And even if it might cost a little bit of money, sometimes when you're broke, you're broke. You don't even have a little bit of money. Then there was the problem with people who, when they did treat the water, they had all of these negative effects associated with it. Stomach aches and cramping. They felt like it cut their intestines, so to say. They were afraid that this, they believed that this was going to lead to cancer. And they're right. I mean, chlorinated water is associated with cancers in the U.S. population. And that the water, if it had the ability to be killing these bacteria, what is, how does it going to be safe for children when they're developing? And in terms of boiled water, nobody liked the taste. It's awful. It's not refreshing. Water straight from the spring, nice, cool, clean, very refreshing. And another impediment was the belief that children, they're going to be exposed to this bacteria. You can't watch every bit of water that the child is going to come in contact with. So they need to build resistance to this bacteria because it's going to be in their environment. And the sooner that they do that, the better. So from this, we've all learned that people, the sources they believe are the most contaminated, don't necessarily have the most bacterial contamination. People believe that the majority of water contamination occurs at the source, whereas the majority of the contamination we can see is much greater in the household, but that people are willing to go out of their way to invest in the health. People are traveling 2 hours just to get water from a source that they think is better. So this, you know, this can indicate to us this is a population that's willing to learn, that wants to, that's active in their health. So what we did, we gave people the tools so that they could make informed choices. So this is one of the materials that we would use. We'd show the water source, have a picture of the source. It's a very illiterate society, and even us, if you can read, you react to visual cues, and a petri dish that shows the, and this is in Creole, explains what the petri dish is showing. And bacteria, the word bacteria, the word microbes is already a part of people's vocabulary. They're constantly saying, mikwo, that's what's responsible for you getting sick. And people reacted very strongly to seeing this. And there became a joke saying, you, guess what, you drink poop for breakfast. And then the white girl showed me, I've seen the pictures. So then they would go around and show everybody these pictures. And then the community decided, they felt so strongly about this, they wrote a play to teach everybody about the water contamination and how to treat the water. And considering the fact that the largest barrier to water treatment was cost, they decided, they elected to teach people how to use solar treatment, or the SODIS method. All right, of course there are limitations to this survey. It's not longitudinal, so we don't know exactly over time how the diarrhea is going to be, the incidence of diarrhea. It's a small sample size, so perhaps we'd find more powerful associations with a larger sample size. And we also have the fact that we were relying on people's self-reporting and not clinical diagnosis.